Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about the Tocharians. How do you say honey in Mandarin? If you speak or have studied the language, you're probably saying me, or maybe feng mi. But we all know that feng means bee, so the longer form is literally just bee honey. The short form is just me. Well, has it occurred to you that the word for honey in Russian is myot, from Old Slavonic miet? Has it occurred to you that in English, mead is a type of alcohol made from honey, a drink favored by the Vikings and other early Germanic peoples, as in Valhalla, the mead hall of Odin? Has it occurred to you that the word for honey in Spanish is miel, in Latin mel, in Greek meli, and so on? Yes, I am in fact saying that the Chinese word for honey is cognate with the equivalent words in all these European languages. But how can that be? Particularly if you take into account the fact that the Chinese character mi is hardly new. It's attested to in the Chuci, the Ballads of Chu, a poetry anthology written during the late Warring States period, so something like 3rd century BC. It was also attested to in the Erya, the earliest dictionary of the Chinese language, which was probably compiled even earlier than the Ballads of Chu. And yet, scholars have established it is a loanword from an Indo-European language. It's just that the borrowing happened so long ago that not only have we mostly forgotten about it, but the language it was borrowed from has long gone extinct. And that's what I want to talk about today. Tocharian, the language, and the Tocharians, the people who spoke Tocharian. Actually, even that's not quite right. The borrowing occurred centuries before the language we know as Tocharian emerged. So in fact, the borrowing was from Proto-Tocharian, the extinct ancestor language of this other extinct language of the Indo-European family. What we understand or define as the Tocharian language comes from about 7,600 texts discovered so far that date to between about 400 and 1200 AD. And these documents all come from the northern edge of the Tarim Basin, which is located in modern-day Xinjiang, but in centuries past formed a part of the so-called Western lands of Chinese cultural and political geography. So, the Tocharian people who spoke the Tocharian language, lived in this area. Human settlements existed here as of around 2000 BC, and the earliest mummy in the area dates to possibly as early as 2100 BC. But we don't know if these were the same people who later spoke the Tocharian language and left us with these texts. Although one theory of the origin of the Tocharians is that they migrated into the area from the ancient Near East around 2000 BC, another theory is that they were descendants from the Afanasievo culture, which was the eastern offshoot of the Yemnaya culture, otherwise found north of the Caucasus. The Afanasievo culture was located in the Altai area, more or less the borderlands between modern Xinjiang, Mongolia, and Siberia, between around 3300 and 2500 BC. And the name Tocharian is also wrong, a misnomer. Archaeologists began to recover the aforementioned 7,600 documents starting in the early 20th century. This was, of course, the age of the Great Game between Russia and Britain, the time of Western adventurers on the Silk Road, men like Oral Stein, Sven Hedin, and Paul Paleo. And the German Tourfan expedition, led by Albert Grünwedel and Albert von Lecoq, traveled this area collecting documents from 1902 to 1914. So in these documents, they found two closely related languages written in the already deciphered Middle Brahmi script of India. Both of them mentioned the name Togar or Togari. The German scholar Friedrich Muller, examining these documents, remembered something from the Greco-Roman classics. Didn't the Greek geographer Strabo mention a people called the Tocharoi? Strabo wrote that the Tocharoi overran the Greco-Bactrian kingdom located in present-day Afghanistan in the 2nd century BC. Muller decided that the Tocharoi of Bactria, Afghanistan, and the Togari mentioned in the texts from the Tarim Basin were one and the same. So they came to be called Tocharians. And the two closely related written languages of these texts came to be called Tocharian A and Tocharian B. Modern scholars now generally believe Muller was mistaken. The Tocharoi in Afghanistan were probably the people more often called the Yuezhi in Chinese historiography, also known as the Guishuang or Kushan Empire. The Tocharians by the Tarim Basin were a different Indo-European people. Nonetheless, the name Tocharian has stuck. The people known as the Tocharians probably variously refer to themselves as Agni or Kuchi, or Agnia or Kuchia. Their state was typically called the Kuchu, and that name is still preserved in Chinese geography. The city of Kuchu, on the northern edge of the Tarim Basin, is today a town of nearly 500,000 people. As for the other name, Agni or Agnia, well, Agni, of course, means fire in Sanskrit. That's cognate with the English word to ignite, Latin ignis, the name Ignatius, and so on. Which reminds me that in Chinese, Tocharians are called Tuhuoluo, or sometimes Duhuoluo. Tuhuoluo literally translates as fire-breathing fabric. But of course, it's not meant to be read semantically, but is only a phonetic transliteration of Tocharian. Only, wait a second. If the Western identification of the Tocharians of Xinjiang and the Tocharoi of Bactria, Afghanistan, is mistaken, then why would the Chinese make the same mistake? The answer, of course, is that the Chinese adopted the Western identification. Ancient Chinese texts do talk about the people they knew as the Tuhuoluo. The Tang Dynasty monk Xuanzang, who famously traveled to India to bring back Buddhist sutras, as fictionalized in the Ming Dynasty novel Journey to the West, mentioned the Tuhuoluo in his nonfiction travelogue, published in 646 AD. But his description here is very clearly of Bactria in modern Afghanistan. He says he only reached the Tuhuoluo after passing through the Iron Gate, i.e. Termez, on today's border between Afghanistan and Uzbekistan. And he says the country of Tuhuoluo hugged the Pamir Mountains on its east, Persia on the west, and the Great Snow Mountain to its south, presumably the Hindu Kush. So he didn't mean a people living by the Tarim Basin. Other ancient Chinese texts talked about a nation living in the Kuchu area, but they didn't call them the Tuhuoluo. Instead, they often said they were connected to or were descended from the Yuezhi or Kushan people. So when the Chinese talked about the Tuhuo Luo in ancient texts, they meant the Toharoi that Strabo wrote about. But in modern times, because the same erroneous identification by Müller was adopted into Chinese, when we say the Tuhuo Luo, we mean the Toharians of the Tarim Basin. As if the histories of ancient and often nomadic peoples weren't already confusing enough. Okay, so we know these Toharians of the Tarim Basin spoke an Indo-European language. In fact, it appeared to preserve certain characteristics of Proto-Indo-European, suggesting it's an early offshoot. But what about the people? What about their DNA? Well, like I said, mummies have been found in the area, preserved by the aridness of the desert. The older cohort of mummies date to between 2100 BC and 1600 BC. Analysis of their genes show ancient North Eurasian ancestry, but no Western steppe-related ancestry. Long suspected to be ancestors of the Toharians, nowadays it seems less likely, given that genetically these people had no connection to, for example, the Afanasievo culture. A later group of mummies dates to the first millennium BC. They show cultural characteristics similar to the Saka or Scythian or Scythian culture of the Altai region. Some mummies were also found with tapestries that seemed similar to those of the Hallstatt culture of Central Europe. Genetically, some of them have turned out to be European, while others are Mongoloids. So, perhaps from different populations or from a mixed population. Maybe these people, or some of them, were the ancestors of the Toharians. It should be noteworthy that the Han Shu, or Book of the Han, from the Han Dynasty, of course, tells us that many of the quote-unquote barbarians who lived in this area possessed blue or green eyes with deep eye sockets and red beards on men, who typically had plentiful facial hair. Apparently European traits. Frescoes found in the caves in this area, particularly the famous Kizil caves, also show people with light-colored hair and eyes. It's also noteworthy, I think, that the latest genetic research on the Xiongnu Empire, which was the mortal enemy of the Han Dynasty and which occupied this area during this time, suggests that the Xiongnu were a racially mixed bunch. There might have been elements, tribes, within the Xiongnu Confederation that were genetically European, while others were genetically Asian. What religion did the Toharians follow? Well, a lot of the Toharian language texts we've uncovered are Buddhist texts. When Xuanzang passed through the country of Kuche in 630 AD and received the hospitality of its king, he noted that over 100 Buddhist convents stood here, with over 5,000 disciples. That makes sense. Transoxiana, the far side of Central Asia from the Middle East, was largely Buddhist until Islamic conquest and the process of conversion that began in the mid-8th century. But Buddhism itself only arose in India around 500 BC, so the Toharians could have only converted to it much later than that. So what religion did the Toharians, or their ancestors, the Proto-Toharians, follow before converting to Buddhism? We don't know. Okay, so if the Toharians were the people of the ancient state of Kuchu, then what do we know about that country's political history? We know that they paid tribute to Han Dynasty China in 65 BC, while China continued to fight its duel against the Xiongnu. We know forces from another state killed the Kuche king and divided the kingdom in 46 AD, but the people of Kuche fought back a few years later and then asked the Xiongnu Empire to name a new king for them. We know that in the 70s and 80s AD, Han China, under the famous general Ban Chao, used a combination of military power and diplomacy to bring this area under Chinese control, and the state of Kuche played a significant role in that process. Later, we know that during the chaotic North and South dynasties in China, the Kuche fought the state of former Qin. In 382 AD, the former Qin sent an army westward and conquered the Kuche. In the late 5th century, the Hephthalites, or White Huns, expanded their empire from Bactria into the Tarim Basin, staying until the fall of their empire in 560. The first Turkic empire then replaced the Hephthalites in the region, becoming the Tokharians' new overlords. Then in 618, the year of the Tang Dynasty's founding in China, King Suvarnapushpa of Kuche sent an embassy to China to acknowledge its vassalage under the Chinese. Really, this was a ploy for the Kucheans to get out from under the thumb of the Turks. The Tang Empire then, indeed, defeated the Eastern Turkic Empire and then, in 630, marched into the northern Tarim Basin to attack the Western Turkic Empire. Despite previously accepting Tang suzerainty, the Kingdom of Kuche then fought the Chinese in 648. The Chinese, having conquered the Kuche, set up a protectorate there that same year. But then the Kucheans fought back, retaking their capital city and killing the Chinese general. Tang China struck back again and hard, reconquering the area, reestablishing the protectorate, and razing 5 cities and killing 11,000 Kucheans in reprisal. Kuchean civilization began to decline after that. In the 660s and 670s, the Tibetan Empire wrested the area from Tang China, but then Tang China regained it from the Tibetans in the 690s. Later in Tang history, after the dynasty had lost its vitality and much of its power, the Chinese lost it to the Tibetans again in 792. Meanwhile, the ruling family of the Kucheans, whom the Chinese recorded as having the surname Bai, which means white, and might have been a reference to their skin tone, disappeared from Chinese records after 787. Little in Chinese sources mention Kuche in 9th and 10th centuries. But we know that the Uyghur people moved into the Tarim Basin from what is now Mongolia, starting in 803, establishing their new capital of Gaochang near what is now Turfan in 866. In the long run, they would prove to be the end of the Tokharians as an independent people. Over the centuries, Uyghurs and Tokharians appear to have blended into each other. Some Uyghurs actually had adopted the Buddhism of the Tokharians, and in some cases, even Nestorian Christianity. But ultimately, of course, the religion that grew dominant in the region was Islam. The jihad declared in the 11th century against Buddhist states in the area by the Turkic Muslim state Karahania surely helped to push the process of Islamization forward. Even so, the state of Kuche continued to exist for longer than you might imagine. It had diplomatic dealings with Song Dynasty China during the 11th century. As mentioned, the latest of the Tocharian texts only date to about 1200 AD. But as a polity, the Kuche state seemed to have persisted until the late 14th century. Timur, or Tamerlane, supposed descendant of Genghis Khan, the great warlord and empire builder of Central Asia, and still the national hero of modern Uzbekistan, finally destroyed Kuche once and for all. The Tocharian people disappeared, as did their language, replaced in the area by Old Uyghur. All right, on that note, this has been MODG. Thank you for listening.